For July the 20th, 2018, we talk about that Uncharted fan film, Absolver, and we ask you, which games have your favorite barks? Welcome to Level 249. My name is Cole Ross.
I'm Dennis Furia.
I'm David Meismith.
I'm Ben Merkel.
And you are listening to The Level. It's a podcast for people who love video games. Here, smack dab, probably in the middle of summer, thereabouts, something like that.
Yeah.
David, you were here last time. Dennis and Ben, you guys were not here last time. I think the rarest combination is what we had last time. What fucking gives you the right?
All right. I do have a little bit of an excuse. One was that I hadn't played no video games because I was in Cincinnati the week before.
Right.
But two, more importantly, there was a showing of Junin, which is a Paul Thomas Anderson movie that he recorded in India. And so I went to see that. And then there was a live Q&A with Paul Thomas Anderson and Johnny Greenwood afterwards.
Oh, you have to do that. Yeah.
It was. For me, it was really sweet.
Was it good?
Yeah, it was cool. It was. I found out from the Q&A that apparently all the music equipment got there. They shot it for a couple weeks in this fort. It's also the same city that the movie The Fall is shot in at the end.
What?
Paul Thomas Anderson did not get his camera equipment shipped to him because apparently they didn't bribe the right people sending in the camera equipment.
That's a thing.
And so yeah, he had to shoot on all these kind of lower budget cameras, but it still looked really good.
Huh.
So, yeah.
Huh.
I guess that's what happens when you actually have talent. That's why they tell me everything I do turns out horribly.
Yeah. You can't buy yourself a better product. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Huh. No, I had no idea that was is that a recent movie that he did, or
it came out in 2015, but it wasn't a theatrical release. It was just a movie they made. And then, yeah, it's just something they did, but I had never even seen a copy of it or anything. So.
Yeah. No, that's cool. You're reminding me. It's been a long time since I've seen The Fall.
That's a good movie.
Yeah.
So no, what is The Fall? I've not heard of this.
Go ahead.
Do you want to? All right. It's the sales pitch for it is it's about a little girl in a hospital and a actor in a hospital, or it's rehabilitation in the 1920s California. The guy is an actor who had an accident on a scene. He's also heartbroken, and so he tells the girl a little story to try and get her to win her over so that she can get a morphine pill so he can kill himself. So it's really dark in that sense. Boom. But then the most of the movie is the story that he's telling her, and it's showing it, and it's just in all these far out locations that you've probably seen a lot of them since the movie came out, but at the time it came out, a lot of these were unseen locations just around the world that were just gorgeous. So,
yeah, no, it is one of the most visually spectacular movies I've ever seen. Ben, you're actually, I saw it with you for the first time. We went to see it at the Esquire.
Oh, sweet.
Yeah. Back, I think in 2007, something like that.
Yeah,
that does sound like an Esquire ass movie.
Yeah, it's real neat. Not just in the way that I am, always enthusiastic about a story about a story about storytelling, that kind of stuff. But it brings Charles Darwin into it and stuff. It's real cool.
Mm-hmm.
No, I need to pick that up on Blu-ray.
I didn't know he was still acting.
Yeah, he got over his stomach issues.
I didn't know they still had Blu-ray.
Yeah, little known thing is you wrote a paper that said Survival of the Fittest or Charles Darwin.
Yes, Charles Darwin is eternal. Oh, man, that's cool. Yeah. Dennis, what's your excuse? In case it doesn't come through, I am not.
Yeah,
angry.
Right. I nothing so cool. I got slammed by work.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So my one sentence description to Ben's freaking opus there.
Sorry.
I'm jealous, Ben. I gotta plan my absences a little better here.
Yeah. At least make it generate a story for us.
I know. Yeah. I also thought about The Little Prince while I was working, which is also another story about storytelling. So
the Little
Am
Prince.
Am I the only one who that story played no part in my childhood?
I have.
Oh
not
no!
Heard
no
of
I came
Prince,
to it as an adult.
So. Okay.
I'm with you, David.
What is the story of The Little Prince? It looks like a children's book.
It is a children's book turned movie. I think it was like a Netflix original. Where like this, you know, the little girl whose hyper helicopter mom has her life planned out for her. You know, they move into a house next to this eccentric old man who's telling, you know, she kind of sneaks away to hear stories from him, and kind of befriends him, despite, you know, shirking her duties over the summer that her mom has prescribed for her.
Hmm.
And that the little prince is the story that he tells her while they're hanging out.
Oh, nice.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I'd never heard of this either. So don't feel crazy, David.
All right.
Yeah.
Fair enough. Well, I mean, at least not for that reason.
Yeah. Cross that one off the list. Yeah, no, I've
we're
had
narrowing it down. Yeah,
I have not attended any Q&As by film masterminds or things like that. No, I feel really good because I've gotten like actually for the first time in a while, I am not behind on assignment play for stuff.
Woo-hoo!
Yeah, what? I know, right? I finished up Nier over the weekend because we're talking about that for Watch Out for Fireballs. It was like, okay. it was Nier and then, or no, it was Pathologic, which is an incredibly long game. And then Nier, which is also on its multiple playthroughs pretty long. So like now, like I'm kind of sitting pretty for a while. So I have no idea what to do with myself.
So this is the Nier that was like the just weird, high fantasy game that no one played.
Yes. Yeah. This is the Nier from 2010, not Nier Automata, the kind of more regarded recent game.
Cole, you should start another podcast since you have some free time.
Oh, no. Yeah. Yeah. Definitely. I've got some breathing room right now. Let's make sure that never happens again.
Yeah.
Cole, want to come and check out VR? Is the next question.
Yeah. No, that's the thing. We hung out a few weeks ago and what was it? It was like 1 o'clock and we were leaving and I looked at your television and I saw the VR thing. And I was like, yeah, none of us need to be awake right now. It'll take me like 25 minutes to get home. That'd be real neat. No, we totally missed an opportunity. So
KRVR.
Yep. Oh, well, David, how about you?
Not too much. Pretty much just work and, work.
What was your excuse for being here last week, David?
Wow, you know.
So confrontational. It was a good episode.
I,
it was fun.
I ask myself that every episode. I'm like, what mistakes have I made in my life that have led me to this point?
I have a suspicion that you're joking, but if it's true, I feel real bad.
Yeah, I mean, I don't ask that about the podcast. Maybe
oh,
about
okay.
Like,
how did I get here? Yeah, no, I get it. Yeah, so we're here together. We're doing a show. We're doing the regular kind of show, the brief, the multiplayer, and the grind. And why don't we get started with
the brief,
where we talk about things that are happening in the world of video games around us. Which one of y'all is talking about that Nathan Fillion thing?
Are you doing that, Dennis?
I can. I'm 5 minutes into it, so I haven't watched the entire thing yet.
All right. I can. I don't mind. Well, I don't care either way.
It's fine.
I had it up at work. I was like, when I get a down moment, I'll watch it. And then the day was fast. So, but yeah, why don't you take it then? Yeah.
Yeah. So this is a fresh story for us today. It'll be 3 days old when the podcast comes out. But today they released a live action Uncharted video, I guess. It's just a 14 minute video. The big news is that Nathan Fillion is starring in it and he is playing Nathan Drake, which is like good casting. That's kind of what everyone kind of imagined Nathan Drake as. And the video itself is just kind of like a short snippet. It's kind of like in the same vein as the video game series. Nathan Drake is like interrogated by bad guys. He makes quips. There's shooting. There's fighting. Like basically any main element in the video game, they have it in the video a little bit. The production value isn't great. Like it seems like they spent probably most of their budget on casting Nathan Fillion. But it's still cool. It was a fan-made video. I think the beginning of the video says, like, hey, Naughty Dog, please don't sue us. Like, this is not affiliated with their work at all. But
we're going to use your characters in the name of your thing.
Yeah. But it looks cool. I mean, they have a couple other characters in it that you might be familiar with from the series. They are definitely not casted as well as Nathan Fillion is.
Yeah.
So that's kind of like the highlight of the video for me, at least. But it would be cool if they kind of did something with this. I'm just glad that Nathan Fillion would be interested in doing something like that. Like that mm-hmm. seems like there's hope for an Uncharted movie if they wanted to do one.
I think there's there's been one in the works for years and years at this point.
Okay.
Yeah.
One thing that was kind of kitschy that they did is they tried to do some of the camera work like it was in the video game, where it's like, you know, like if you go up above cover, like kind of like moving the camera up.
Ooh,
like to stun the enemy.
Yeah.
Like Doom doing the first person mode.
Yeah, they didn't go that far or anything, but it was kind of not great, because like in watching the video, where it's like, I think the video game did this a little bit better. So I mean, it was a little bit. So the video itself was a little bit rough around the edges, I guess, what I'm getting at. But it's still awesome that they did it, and it's still awesome that that might be a possibility for the future. But yeah.
I feel like I've been hearing about this forever, and Nathan Fillion has always been kind of the nominal person that they would have brought into it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
My assumption was, upon seeing that he was in it, was like it was like he just knew a friend or something, and that he would be like, yeah, sure, whatever. Like, it struck me more as something that Nathan would do for the hell of it,
mm-hmm. yeah.
Versus anything like that an independent production could pay him for.
Yeah. No,
it's like Robert Pattinson doing all the weird small part stuff just for hell or for the hell of it.
Looking at this, at least press release stuff around this, I guess like Nathan Fillion has been campaigning for years to get that role.
He has
an active interest in getting into that. So mm-hmm. Weird. There's also stuff like Mark Wahlberg is somehow cast in the official one that's in development. Got Tom Holland starring as young Nathan Drake. Like, what's going on?
I hate to say it, but unless they're going to do like a picking up after Uncharted 4 version, I think Nathan Fillion might be a little bit too old.
Yeah, that's the thing. He got it's kind of like Aaron Paul from Breaking Bad. Like, he would have been the perfect Eddie Dean when Breaking Bad was on, but now he's not. Eddie Dean from Dark Tower. No, I think Nathan Fillion's a little bit too old, and like, you know, glass houses or whatever. I think it may be a little bit heavy for it too.
That's easy to change.
I do think he looked better in the video than you might expect in terms of like matching the kind of figure.
Well, I'll show you guys real quick, because it's funny. An ad for Uncharted 4 is right next to the video on my screen.
Okay.
And it is. I mean, it is perfect. So I can only complain so much now that I've seen this, and we can add this to the show notes or whatever. Let me get it up there real quick.
Okay.
But yeah, it is actually a pretty good rendition of Nathan Drake.
Yeah.
When viewed in the lens of Uncharted 4.
For sure. Yeah. I don't say that to be like shitty or weight shame somebody, but like he doesn't look like he did 17 years ago when he did Firefly. And I think that's what
you mean,
a lot of people.
He doesn't look like he routinely parkours around, around Mayan ruins.
Yeah. No, it's just okay. Yeah, I can see that. It's more important to get to get the face and expression and attitude right. Yeah, I feel bad for even bringing that up. It's just people age.
No,
I think
that's reasonable.
Yeah.
Yeah, I imagine he did not do the extensive preparation for this fan film that he wouldn't have done for the actual thing.
I like, and the costume was good too, like, because I guess you can see it now, it matches one-to-one with the Uncharted 4, but then he has like the ring around his neck too, and mm-hmm. there's nice attention to detail.
Yeah, neat. I wonder if this is like that weird Mortal Kombat short film that came out several years ago.
Amazing.
Those were really, really good. And basically, like, that was somebody doing their own pitch for, like, hey, hire me to work on these films if you ever do them again.
Although I think those were actually, at least once it became a series, I think that was actually funded by whoever owns the rights.
Oh, it was picked up by, and not Midway.
Yeah, it was something along the lines of, my understanding is it was basically like, yeah, we're not going to make a movie, but like, feel free to like make a bunch of these. Here's some money.
Okay, yeah, like they contracted them out. It was Warner Brothers is the publisher behind that, so I could see them doing that.
I could be wrong, but that is my understanding.
Yeah.
Side note too. Apparently, it's Naughty Dog lore that Drake, like when his vision goes like white or whatever, it's not him getting shot with bullets a bunch of times.
I saw that.
This was on Reddit. It was like his luck meter. And so the idea is his luck is running out. And so he only takes one bullet to die. And then so like whenever he dies or whatever, that like his luck has run out. And like that's how the game's supposed to be.
Right. Yeah. So I'm the Oprah memories, right? Like you hear something, you say, oh, I've always known that, or I always remember that. I can't figure out if that was something that I heard back around the time Uncharted 2 came out, or if that is just kind of a stock explanation for HP systems and especially tabletop games in general, which is like, HP is just your ability to avoid the killing blow as opposed to like, you know, the flesh being carved from your bone. It sounded like you were going to say something, David.
Oh, no. I was just going to comment on like I really enjoy some of the extended analysis of like HP systems. Although the one that always bothered me was bleeding damage, because like bleeding is basically how weapons work.
Right.
You don't have time to wait for someone to actually die.
Yeah.
Like what happens when someone gets shot or whatever is they sudden loss of blood loss, causes them to pass out.
Right. Like that sword being stabbed through your torso, that didn't kill you. It was heart failure and lack of oxygen to the brain.
Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
So like it's all bleeding damage.
it's bleeding all the way down. So Ben, you had another story on top of this about Octopath Traveler that I'm curious to hear about.
I don't mind double dipping. So Octopath Traveler came out I think a week ago or so,
last Friday
recently. Oh, was it Friday? Okay, cool. And they've already faced shortages with physical copies of the game, which is kind of a weird news story because you can buy the game digitally on Nintendo Switch, so it's not as devastating as a problem as it sounds initially. But that's pretty much the story. The article just itself talked about like how, you know, like this is going to be less and less of a problem in the future since more and more people can just download the game and not get a physical copy if they don't want to. But it also kind of highlighted that like Nintendo and Amazon like both kind of underestimated how well it would sell. So
yeah, that's a little bit ridiculous. I kind of wonder if that's a vote of no confidence in Square. They're like, oh, we didn't expect people to want your shit.
Yeah. And apparently Square issued a formal apology for the fact that they were running out of inventory with it. So, yeah.
Well, that's it's especially a problem. Like the stock shortage is something that I saw in Japan most commonly. So I wonder what the deal is with that.
Yeah. I don't know.
Well, looks neat. I fired up the demo a little bit, but I just worry that it's going to be just a regular, outside of the visual trappings and outside of the class structure of it, I worry that it's going to be just a standard-ass JRPG.
Yeah.
Yeah. Who knows? Anything else about Octopath Traveler?
Nope.
Okay. David, which of these stories do you want to talk about?
Sure. So one of them I'm going to hit super quick, but first need to issue a correction from last week. When talking about Rogue Warrior, I mentioned something about Richard Marchenko, some speculation that some of the stuff he said was false.
Mm-hmm.
I looked back and wasn't actually able to find any information on that. So my bad on that.
Okay.
On a semi-related note, the game that I was confusing it with was apparently Rogue Trooper, which is recently in the news and is about a blue guy maybe in the same universe as Judge Dredd?
What?
I don't know. More relevantly to the rest actual story I'm going to do, there's been some apparently some discussion someone found on a mod forum for Aliens Colonial Marines that basically someone posted that they found in the aliens artificial intelligence, basically the way they're programmed is they were programmed to follow what they called a tether, which was basically their like patrol path. And then the idea was that when they detected the player, they would then be forced to adopt a different tether, that like adopting a new tether would be how they jump to, like, you know, sneak through the vents mode or stuff like that.
Yeah, just kind of establishing like proximities and making sure that they stalk at a distance far enough to be scary, but still close enough to be engaging.
Right, exactly. However, someone found in the source code that apparently the in the code for that to happen, tether was accidentally spelled teether. And
like a kid chewing on a ring.
Yeah, I think it was TEA to be fair, but okay. Yeah, same idea.
All right.
But and if you change that single letter misspelling, suddenly the AI actually becomes somewhat competent, and it's no longer like one of the worst games ever made.
What the fuck? Really?
You think they would have figured that out in testing, but maybe not.
I mean, this is this publisher, this developer has not really proven to be especially competent.
Well, you'd also think the debugger would catch that too if you misspelled a function like that.
Yeah, you would think, especially in like the languages you tend to use for games. But I mean, the reports I read say it's still not a great game, but, you know, it's at least, like, the enemies aren't stupid.
So it has one less thing working against it.
Right, exactly.
God.
So, that's, I don't know. As Ben said, the more the story is, use a strict type checker.
see if your variables match up. For fuck's sake. Wow. That's that is ridiculous.
It could have been passable, you guys. Passable.
I don't even know. Like that, like that's a testament to that botched job. Continue, Ben, sorry.
No, I'm just it does raise a lot of questions of like how something like that would get through. Do they have like an actual teether function that's why it didn't raise any flags? But that was just like I don't know. Like
yeah, no, that's
that's weird.
Yeah, that's
so I forget. That's made by Irrational, right? Or published by them or whatever.
No, that's Gearbox.
Okay.
Yeah. Aliens Colonial Marines was published by Sega.
Okay.
And it was that is like Gearbox's white whale. They were developing it for years and years and years. And, you know, kind of making, you know, very big promises about the way that it would, you know, ultimately shake out. And I think Sega had to sue them to actually get it out the door. And
the Molyneux approach to game development.
I mean, a little bit. Yeah. I think that they were just trying to milk publisher money from a licensed product in order to actually fund other stuff that they were working on.
What doesn't Gearbox kind of have this weird history? Were they the ones that did the Duke Nukem Forever, or am I thinking of something else?
So you're thinking of 3D Realms that was initially developing Duke Nukem Forever. Gearbox picked up Duke Nukem Forever basically as it stood after 3D Realms folded.
I thought that's what they did with this. Like I thought they had a weird thing going where they basically made like Borderlands and then were a clearinghouse for bad games.
I mean, not always. that is a bit of the shame. Like they were the studio that did like the good Half-Life expansions. They did like they did Opposing Force. They did the PC port of Halo. Like they did a bunch of good stuff, but like they reached this certain point where Randy Pitchford, their lead developer, kind of saw himself as an auteur and like basically used these licensing deals to fund their own stuff like Borderlands and things.
Huh.
Yeah. So bummer. I guess they're involved in We Happy Few too, which is weird. Oh, they're publishing it for the PS4, which that'll work great.
Yeah, that's not a good sign.
Sorry to be snarky. I don't like being snarky, but Gearbox does not inspire confidence. Yeah.
I am pretty excited that We Happy Few jettisoned the whole roguelike thing.
Did they?
Yeah.
Huh.
Basically, they realized, oh, people are actually interested in the storyline.
People want authored content, especially when our aesthetic is so strong. Weird. Huh. Well, I'll do mine. I don't know how long this is going to be, but I think about this not a lot, but frequently whenever it comes up, whenever I hear like a family member who has a middle schooler kid talking about Fortnite, thinking about just how much we kind of ate the booger on dismissing that. Like, oh yeah, Fortnite, yeah. Like that was such a weird like dud, like blah, 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 like kind of crazy. And now it is the most popular thing. Epic Games came out and said basically that Fortnite is selling so well that it is completely altering their business model. Epic, when they were, as part of their main business where they license out the Unreal engine for other developers to use and make their own games. You know, they have a content store. It's a little bit like Unity where they take a cut of any of the assets that are sold. Fortnite is selling so well that they are moving from kind of the industry standard model of taking 30% of what they of basically any transaction that happens on their store down to 12%.
To be fair, they've already taken a big cut of PUBG's money.
Oh, sick burn. Yeah, no, they are sitting high on the hog. They're saying thanks to both the marketplace's growth and the success of Fortnite, I think one of those is way bigger than the other. Epic now conducts good.
Yeah. I was just gonna say, I forget where I saw it, but the headline was Fortnite introduces better, more fun counter lawsuit to PUBG.
That is very good. But they're saying the resulting economies of scale enable us to pass the savings along to the Unreal Engine marketplace community while also making a healthy profit for Epic. So basically saying we are riding so high on the hog that we can stop taking as much of your money. And I guess this is retroactive to a certain extent. So a lot of asset makers are getting a bigger payday at this time. So this is good, right? Like, middleware, these arrangements with middleware developers where basically they just attach themselves like an eel on other businesses just by being arbiters, right? Mm-hmm. By running being middlemen, that's the word for it, like that is a little bit weird, a little bit untenable in a lot of ways, but like to see them change it so quickly. Like, if I was working with the Unreal Engine marketplace, I would be real scared because, like, Fortnite, for as popular as it is, you know, anything that gets that popular that fast, there's a risk that it's going to be a fad. So, like, mm-hmm. How do I plan? I have X number of sales, and for a while I was getting 30%. That might not have been great, but it was fine. Now I'm getting 88%. How long is that 88% going to go? If Fortnite sales go down, and you know, there's no guarantee when that's going to happen, if it's in the next year, it's in the next 5 years or whatever, if that goes down and I start building my model around getting 88% of what I sell, like, am I going to be fucked if they decide to change those terms again? Like, how fickle is this that a company that is involved in one industry gets successful in another realm and then all of a sudden it affects this other thing? Like, no, I am like suddenly just like at the mercy of whether or not 12-year-olds lose interest in Fortnite. Like, that just seems
fair, aren't we all?
I guess, yeah. But like, that just seems so crazy to me. Like, I would be freaking out that they were doing this. Like, yeah, it'd be great for the short term, but if they're just going to change it at that, I don't know. Am I wrong? Am I like overreacting to that?
I can't imagine a world in which I would say, no, they should just hold it at 30.
Yeah.
Like, I understand it could go back and that carries risks, mm-hmm. but my God, passing a lot of money is passing a lot of money, right?
Yeah, it is. I think that I would be less freaked out about this if they said, you know what, 80-20.
Yeah, if it wasn't so intense.
Yeah.
Maybe
if it was an even number.
Yeah. Maybe that's how simple my mind is.
The shift is big enough that pure naivete and thinking it'll stay that way forever could screw someone. Whereas mm-hmm. maybe just a 10% change, if someone built their business model around that and it changes back and they just didn't know, then maybe they'd be okay or be able to revert. So yeah. I get that, but that's, you know, trying to protect those people is no reason to rob the, you know, whatever percent that's actually able to kind of look through it the right way of a good opportunity.
That's reasonable.
Maybe some kind of promise of like, we will give you, we changed this on a dime. Mm-hmm. We will give at least 6 months heads up if we change it back.
Right. Yeah, it seems weird. Go ahead.
I'm just thinking of it through the lens of like Lyft and Uber. It's like, I think they're probably just trying to like, decrease the percentage they're taking as low as possible, get as many people in, and then they can increase it as high as they want once there's like the only game in town.
They're setting a trap.
Yeah.
But although, what are the rules for assets? Like, you retain rights to the assets, right? So like anyone else who has a marketplace, you can put your stuff there too, right?
I have no idea. I haven't looked at the contracts. I would imagine that is probably, there's probably nothing really locking you out of that explicitly, but I imagine the technology is different enough that it is a non-trivial amount of work to, you know, to bring it over and make it work with the other thing.
Fair enough. Yeah.
But I don't know like how non-trivial it is. I'm ignorant in that regard, but like looking at that trend, like I don't know, like maybe it is something about my broken ass mind where I look at a good thing, where I look at a good thing and say, how is this going to fuck me?
Yeah.
what would ever cause you to mistrust corporations?
Multiplayer.
Now it is time for the multiplayer, where we ask you a question and then you answer it. Dennis, you published this question. What did you ask the nice people?
Yeah, I want to hear about an underappreciated facet of most video games, which is the NPC bark. So the little snippets of dialogue that come out during the action or just as you're walking through a town that flesh out the game world. They have really high potential for fleshing out the game's world and being completely delightful and funny and memorable. So I asked, what are some of the most funny, delightful, or otherwise memorable NPC barks you've encountered?
Yeah, and I'll get us started here with Mike, who says, Max Payne did a thing in which you were always entering the room while enemies were in the middle of a conversation. The best one was near the end, as you hear one thug saying to the other, I hate stereotypes. I'm not some cold-blooded killer. I'm a nice guy. I love my wife. I have two beautiful kids. And if it means I have to kill people to make ends meet, then it's Payne. Get him! which is like one step away from, man, I can't wait to retire in 2 days.
Yeah.
Oh man.
Hold it.
What?
Isn't that a line from Max Payne?
Maybe.
No.
I can't remember. Yeah. It's been several years since I played it. David, you played it more recently. Is hold it a term from that?
I don't remember that particular one. Although
get the
I
level fact checker.
Yes. Let us call the lore master.
I am contractually obligated to point out that you really need to play Max Payne 2.
As you've, that's fine. I appreciate you living up to the requirements laid out therein. Ben, what does Mark say?
Mark says, playing Halo 3 ODST and having NPC Buck grab a turret and tell me, give me the turret. You suck at it. Don't be mad. We all know it. Felt very cut out, but endlessly amused. I died in game from laughing so hard. Almost any line from Nathan Fillion in a Halo game is gold. Cade 6 as well. I'm not sure which character that is, though.
I don't know.
That's Destiny.
Okay, gotcha.
Oh, yeah.
That's the only reason to play Destiny, which is apparently dying in the next expansion.
Oh, his character is?
Is that Dinklage?
No, Dinklage was replaced by Nolan North a while back.
Oh, man.
Yeah. David, what does Sam say?
Sam says, "Wolves hunt in packs." I didn't play enough of the game to know the context for that one, how to say it. As far as I'm concerned, Dragon's Dogma is the only answer.
Yeah, I don't know the delivery on that either, but I love just little Wikipedia snippets being used as NPC barks.
Ha!
Yeah. Dennis, what does Eric say?
Eric says, "The NPCs that try to fight alongside you in Half-Life 2 are endearing, but early on you get a great piece of dialogue from a passerby in the train station." And the quote is, "They're always departing, but they never arrive. And the ones that do arrive, they never leave. You never see them go. They're always full. No one ever gets on, but they're always departing, but they never arrive."
The person desperately trying to track the movements, but none of them make sense.
Yes.
Fuck, I love Half-Life 2 so much.
Mm-hmm.
God, it's been way too long since I played that. Like, literally, the last time I touched that might have been, like, in full around the time Episode 2 came out.
Ooh.
So, 12 years. 11 years.
You can go back and watch the one game design run through on it.
I watched snippets of that. Like, that was a good recommendation that you made.
Yeah.
Yeah. Let's see. Greg says, 3 o'clock in the morning. I wish I were in bed, sir. A rail guard in the capital city of Oblivion." Yep. Quit complaining. It's your fucking job.
Whoa.
You knew this was second shift. Or is that third? That's probably third.
That's third. If it's 3 a.m., it's third. Although second shift is far more onerous.
Like Oblivion was the one where all the guards were like unstoppable war gods, right?
Oh, they would come on. They would come on you like a hammer of the gods. I mean, I didn't mean to say come on you. I'm sorry. I'd like to apologize to all the families.
That was one of the mods.
Things got rowdy. That was me. So Ben, what does Justin say?
Justin says, "Far Cry 2 enemies frequently call out in ways that let players know exactly what they're doing and where they think you are. Flanking and ambushing are important techniques on hard, and these barks made them possible."
Sounds like Arkham. Like listening to listening to where they think you are.
Yeah.
Or how distressed they are.
I did a little research and was reading an article on good bark writing, essentially.
That's hard.
And it specifically name-checked Far Cry 2 as being very good.
Yeah. I like that game. I wish I played more of it. You played that, right,
Ben?
Say
again?
I asked Ben if he played that.
Yeah, that was one of the first games I got for the PS3, and I was impressed by the fire effects, and the jackal riding, but that's about it.
Okay. Go ahead, David.
Yeah, see, that's a super, super flawed game. Like, this is going to sound dumb, but, like, that game had an amazing inventory system that really justified the rest of the game.
Hmm.
Just in terms of, like, each weapon could only go in a certain slot, and so you had to find kind of like specialist ways to fill out the different weapon roles.
I don't remember enough specifics about that.
I just remember, to avoid drowning, you snap a bone back into place in your hand.
You know, it's your oxygen bone.
Mm-hmm.
The prequel to Gravity Bone. let's see. David, what does Jack say?
Jack says, nothing is more comfortable than... Oh, I feel like we need Jala for this one because I have no idea the second one.
More comforting?
The second quote. Nothing is more comfortable than hearing someone tell me, may you walk on warm sands. It just feels comforting and pleasant. On the other hand, this is the one we need Jala for. You, Noir?
Noir.
Which I assume is like Elder Scrollsian speak.
That is a really good guess. Yeah, that's what the dark elves use. It's their word for outsider, Enwa.
Okay. So you Noir felt just plain old hurtful. And thus Morrowind was much harder for me to play than Oblivion or Skyrim.
Morrowind does such a good job of making you feel like you are just not welcome. I love it.
Interesting.
Yeah. And you walk on warm sands. That's one of the barks that the Khajiit do, the cat people.
Did they ever do a game set in, like, Khajiit land or whatever?
No, they have not done Elder Scrolls elsewhere, and I really, really want them to.
Yeah, it seemed like, I don't know, like...
Desert Kingdom, that'd be so fun.
This is super, super, like, a series that isn't about exactly for me, but, like, it seems like that and Morrowind were the only places in that like lore that I really had any interest seeing.
Yeah. Unless I'm running it like Hightower or something in 6, which is a bummer, but oh well. The lizard person, the Argonian area seems pretty cool too.
So I thought the Argonians were in Morrowind. Am I wrong?
No, Morrowind is the Dark Elves.
Yeah, the lizards have like some like crazy swamp that like no one else has hardly been in, right?
Right. I forget the name of the swamp, but
yeah. For a series I hate, I sure do know a lot.
I was gonna remark, yeah.
Hate the series, love Wikipedia.
Ooh, yeah. Yep. ask me about Chim. Dennis, what does Jonathan say?
Jonathan says, during the Batman Arkham games, it was common for the Joker to insult the last henchman in a group. For example, and I gotta give this my best shot. Well, excuse me, maybe I wasn't explicit. If you see the bat, you're allowed to fight back.
Very good, I like that.
Channeling my inner Mark Hamill there, for what it's worth.
It's difficult. You can only do it for a little bit at a time.
I can't get the rasp to the chuckle.
Yeah, you just become Winnie the Pooh. Yeah.
I'm not even gonna try because I'm gonna biff it real hard and it'll be real funny. I'm not gonna give my enemies that ammo.
Batman and Christopher Robin.
Man. This tigger is made out of springs.
Where's the honey?
Oh, man. I can't top that. So we can continue. Franz says, not sure if they apply, but I loved the car monologues in Deadly Premonition. I didn't expect York to have such a great taste in movies. Oh, it's so good. I love that. Like, that is a great, I mean, driving in that game is a fucking chore. Just like 75% of that game is a fucking chore. But the fact that they acknowledged maybe there would be something you want to listen to, and they just filled it with the creator's opinions on 80s ghost and monster movies is great. So good.
I'll never forget, this is tangenting off of car dialogues, but the first time you go driving with your friend in Saints Row, the third.
I knew exactly what you were going to talk about. Yeah.
And you just belt out Sublime. It's pretty great.
Well, in 4, you belt out Bismarcky, the you got what I need, and the alien overlord like cuts over you, and people are so offended that people disrespect Bismarcky. you got what I need. See, that's the trick about that song, is like you cannot do it as off key as Bismarcky does. Like, if you have any sense of what a note is.
Man. Good stuff. Car dialogues.
Yeah, car dialogues. Great. Ben, what does Robert say?
Robert says, there's a cringeworthy bit in Mafia 2 where one guard asks his buddy, What if one day they make you a TV you can play, where you can move a man with a stick and make him shoot by pressing a button, before being shut down for talking crazy? It's awkward, awfully written and acted, and you can practically taste the writer's smugness. And yet here I am, still thinking about it 8 years later.
Hey, you're still talking about it, so it must have worked.
falling hardcore under the memorable category versus the other two.
Yeah. Do you ever think that maybe somebody outside of us is controlling our lives and like watching and making terrible things happen just to feel their own joy?
You know, the version of that in 20 years,
I pretty much assume that's what is happening. I mean, that's basically politics, right?
I guess. Continue, Dennis.
The version of that in 20 years is going to be like someone saying, well, what if the Matrix was real? And everyone's like, oh, come on, that's so trite.
Yeah. What if all of us, what if our whole solar system is just an atom under a giant's thumb?
Whoa, man.
That whole thing blew my mind. David,
popped your head like a headshot in Wolfenstein 2.
Speaking of Wolfenstein 2, David, let me think here. Yes, I believe that is it. David, what does Michael say?
In the old in the new Wolfenstein 2, I was sneaking up on some Nazis and overheard a conversation from them going something like this. Man, did you hear about that firefight in town? It was brutal. Yeah, those rebels, always complaining all the time about how we're the monsters when they're always resorting to violence. Don't they believe in hearing all sides of the argument? Makes you wonder who's the real monsters, us Nazis or them? This is now dialogue from a 2017 video game. Perfection.
Moral equivalence. Hey, you know, what if there's any doubt at all in a situation? What if that was an excuse just to be as awful as possible?
Wolfenstein really is doing a great job with the whole political commentary. For so many games kind of taking the wet noodle stance, mm-hmm. I feel like Wolfenstein does pretty freaking good.
Yeah, I mean, like, they were pandering. Like, it's the easiest point in the world to score to say fuck Nazis. Well, I guess not, because...
Like, no,
we have fucking Nazis there now. Yeah, fuck me. No, but like when they got up during the Bethesda press conference and said like, yeah, we're gonna give you lots of new ways to kill Nazis together because fuck Nazis. I don't know. I'm not saying good. No equivalence. Fuck Nazis. There we go. Fuck Nazis is a good thing to hear and should be said as often as possible. And you know, unless you're in a position to sexually gratify a Nazi, in which case, do not fuck that Nazi. Let's take Lysistrata on that. deny them any kind of gratification.
I'm sorry. The way you said that, this is a long walk around, but follow me.
Okay.
There's a book I read for the kids. It's called Dragons Love Tacos.
Okay.
Dragons can't eat anything spicy, though, because it, you know, ignites their fire breath.
Right.
And there's a moment where there's spicy salsa on the tacos, and the narrator voice goes like, "Dragons, I know you love tacos, but do not eat those tacos." And it is the exact same tone of voice that you use. You said, "Do not fuck those Nazis.
Do not fuck those Nazis."
And I'm just imagining that children's book now, and it's not working.
Do not fuck that taco?
Oh, no.
Yeah, hot sauce on the wing wong. No, thank you.
Oh, no. Okay, I'm sorry I did that to you.
No, that's perfectly fine. I forget who did that. That was you, Ben, right? That was David. Dennis, what does Austin say?
It was subtle, but the NPCs talking to you about the New Vegas casinos always felt good and made it feel like a true trip to Vegas.
Oh, yeah. The people on the streets like Hawken, you know, just trying to lure you in. Yeah. Loose as craps in town.
Mm-hmm. Phrasing.
That was intentional. I'm punchy today. I've been recording for like 6 hours. let's see. Christopher says, any and every guard in any game ever that ends their search for me with it's just the wind, I'll never get enough of that. Yeah, it's totally just the wind that tried pumping you with 3 tranquilizer darts and missed. Yeah.
It's an aggressive wind.
Must have been my imagination.
I mean, if it's a blowgun, technically it was.
Yeah.
My favorite though version of that is the what Dishonored, the like must be a rat.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. In particular, because you can get it after you just chucked a hand grenade at someone.
Yeah. they're getting wily, these rats. Oh, jeez. Let's see here, Ben. What does John say?
John says, not technically NPC dialogue, but in Diablo 2, when a druid comes upon a bunch of dilapidated buildings and he says, ruins, the fate of all cities.
That's profound. Good. Yeah, I like that. All will soon be dust. Nature will reclaim us.
And that is very druidic of him.
Yeah. Diablo 2 is fun. It's been a while since I played a game like that.
Hmm.
Yeah. And finally, David, what does Brandon say?
Brandon says, it's a box from message one or, oh, sorry. It's a box from Metal Gear Solid 1 or Need a Light. Sorry, that is my best impression. From StarCraft.
Or Got a Light from Twin Peaks, The Return.
I haven't smoked for enough decades to quite do that voice.
Yeah. I smoked for about 2 years. That doesn't account for all of this. Yeah. Huh. Need a light. Oh, the pyros, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. The flame monsters that you can. Yeah. 5x5 in the pipe. In the pipe, 5x5. There we go. Man, those barks are very good. Mine, I can't recall one from a game that I have played, but one of my favorites that I've heard about. In Far Cry 3, basically any time you come across an enemy that is indisposed, looking away from you, they're taking a piss, and they're also complaining about how painful it is when they piss. Like, to a man, each of them is suffering some terrible, terrible cock malady. And they
about Green Mile kind of shit.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. But not just like, you know, Hank Hill near a urethra. Like, I'm talking about some real like wrath of God. You need to rethink your life kind of stuff. It's fantastic just how ubiquitous it is across that entire, I guess, kind of archipelago that you're working on.
That's great.
Yeah. So just wanted to, that one I think is the funniest because it definitely is like a tonal decision, but I think that they maybe they put the frequency just too high on people talking about how much it burns when they pee, and it paints a picture that I don't know if they wanted to paint. Ben, how about you?
So I want to start with a bad one. One that's like kind of bad, but I have a soft spot for it in my heart is Just Cause 2. All the guards just say, "I'm going around." That's all they say in any situation. So they just found one dialogue setting that could work for like any part in the game. So they stuck with that. But that's been imprinted in my mind. One game that I'm really impressed by is GTA, the phone conversations people have on the streets when they're walking around.
Yeah.
Those are like really varied, and they're also like pretty long, like a couple minutes sometimes. So that's always like, and I don't know how many there are, so that would be like an interesting thing to look up, is like how many different conversations there are. And another one that I think is like a common one that most people like is Portal 2. It does a really good job with dialogue conversations. The one in particular I'm thinking of is the one where Wheatley sets up a trap for you, you escape it, and then you go and leave or whatever, but you can come back to talk to him, and he says, can you jump off the ledge, like, since the trap didn't work? And then if you do jump off the ledge, he goes, "Oh, okay, thanks." As you fall down.
Even outside of like scripted occurrences, like when GLaDOS or Wheatley talk to you, like the turrets, the way that they are meant to sound so wholesome, but also make you feel terrible about what you're doing.
Yeah.
I think that is expertly written bark.
I forgive you.
Yeah. Ow, ow, ow. David, how about you?
Sure. So I think in terms of like just redunculous ones, pretty much all of the NPC dialogue in the Stalker series, I don't know exactly what they were going for, But like their translation just fundamentally missed the way like Americans speak. It's just all straight up frat boy.
Oh wow, huh?
Yeah, I mean like they die literally. It's like, what's up, bro? Let's go kill some zombies.
Don't they have NPCs playing acoustic guitar in that as well?
They also do, and that's awesome.
Crap, oh, that every song is crashing to me.
Like as far I think it must have been like they were trying to like write it, you know, incorporate slang or something, and just like, you know, like just turned it up way too high.
Yeah,
but there's also a very like kind of infamous segment when you enter one of the bars in the first game. There's basically an NPC that does their like generic greeting.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing is, it seems like it's triggered to go off like when you enter an area, but they forgot to like put any sort of like, you know, only do it right when you enter or like put in a delay. So he'll just repeat himself over and over on a loop. Just,
oh,
I said, come in, don't stand there. I said, come in, don't stand there. Like just as indefinitely.
Very high intensity, yeah.
So I would say in terms of more like serious bark, in Path of Exile, when you're playing as the Templar, who's basically you know, kind of his backstory was that he was sort of semi like framed as a heretic and like exiled, you eventually like face down and kill the guy who exiled you, and your like victory dialogue in the, you know, kind of vein of like the Diablo 2 style thing is, you chose the road, old friend, God put me at the end of it.
Ooh.
Which is fairly badass.
That's pretty good. I like that. Yeah. Dennis, gonna move on to you. Before you answer though, and this may actually just be the answer that you give, what inspired you to ask this question? Because this is really good.
Yeah, I honestly I don't know. I was like, oh, I need to put up a question. And went to NPC barks. Yeah. So
well, what is so your favorite or more most memorable or what have you?
Yeah, I got two for you. One is, I swear to God, I heard this in either Halo or Halo 2, and I went to the Wikipedia for them, but the little grunts when they're stuck with a grenade and, like, panicking,
yeah.
I swear to God, I heard one go, fuck me!
The grunts in general are pretty good.
Now, there's a list of quotes, and there's a couple that it could have been. There's, get it off of me, which... Right. Maybe. And then there's also taxi, which I'm not, would that have any in the Halo Combat Evolved? Would that have any reason to actually say taxi in the game? Or maybe
I think maybe they are talking about
the
they're talking about their favorite reruns from Nick at Night.
I guess. So I have a vivid memory of hearing that and losing it. Cause he just squeals until it, you know, the grenade goes off.
Right.
But yeah, in general, the grunts are great.
And I love from like the in-world standpoint, just the idea of like them, you know, the aliens that are kind of the rank and file having been exposed to humans enough to pick up some of the language.
Yeah. I think it's particularly great, though, that if you stick a grunt, sometimes you can get the bark of not again.
Hey, just put me together again. Yeah.
Yeah.
I had so anytime the grunts from Halo come up, I'm reminded of somebody from high school, and like this is fraught because you don't want to hold this against somebody. Like they're definitely not listening, but like they're fucking 30 now, just like we all are, so you don't want to do that. Mm-hmm. But like just somebody who was in like theater circles and then like in playing Halo circles, who would just like out of nowhere at the worst possible times just out run away like it was a grunt. It was like, what the fuck are you doing? Can you just like not like scream something in that really annoying voice, man?
The concept and the execution are both terrible. What are you doing?
Yeah, David,
do this, in the middle of playing games, or just do this in the middle of the school day?
Just in the world.
All right.
He's a fine guy. Like, it just, whatever. Like, just, again, we're all
just
fucking...
like that mafia writing. It sticks with you.
Yeah. No, we're all fucking 30 now. But, like, it was just, it was gonna, like, whoa, man, that's a bit much. what was your other one? Oh, good.
Yeah. I had a final one, which is from the Valkyria Chronicles, and I use it all the time. but you can hear enemy radio chatter during the game. And one of the barks is when you do something particularly good is, "I'm impressed, but not surprised."
it probably says so something perfect. That as soon as you said Valkyria Chronicles, I knew where you were going.
Yes. Well, that became quite the thing between you and I. I think it bled its way over to my siblings. And so whenever you're doing something particularly shameful, someone will go, "I'm impressed, but not surprised." Oh, yeah.
Well, it's like a mantra that comes up with me and particularly my brother, but just a lot of people around, like anything that happens with Trump, like, "Oh, I'm shocked, but not surprised."
Nope. So that one has probably had the most profound impact on my thinking patterns.
It truly changed your life.
Yes.
And you know, that's all you can hope is that something that you run across is useful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what one other actually I want to throw out in Mad Max, one of the mechanics for like their equivalent of like taking a base in say like Far Cry. One of the mechanics with that is there's basically a guy in the middle of each of the bases that's suspended by is completely unarmed, is suspended by like this hot air balloon a couple of feet off the ground, and he basically just like tell the various enemies like where you are and like buff them with kind of shout encouragement, stuff like that. And so normally like killing them as soon as possible makes them much easier, so that's usually the way you go. But if you kill every enemy in the base except for him, the dialogue is hilarious because it's just like, "So, here we are." I was totally joking when I said all those things to you, there's entire pieces, sequences of just barks at just that, like him trying to like backpedal.
Yeah. So we don't have to do this, do we? Okay. well, thank you everybody for writing in. If you want to participate in these, look at our Facebook page on Monday afternoons. That is facebook.com/thelevelpodcast. Those are usually put up by Dennis and Jala are the ones who do that, and we are grateful for them for doing that.
The grind.
Now it is time for the grind, where we talk about the games we have been playing over the past period of time or so. I've had to look back to determine who has been away the longest. And this is going to have to be Ben, you're going to go first. You said, like, you were here last week. Not last week, the week before last week. There we go. However, you were not there the week before. We've had to go to like weird like fifth tier tiebreakers. What's the new game you got?
So I picked up a new game today. I picked up Octopath Traveler, actually.
Oh shit.
Because of a recommendation from a friend, and because I got a good review on IGN, and it was something I kind of want to check out for if nothing else. Like, I'm usually not huge into JRPGs, but the style of the game looks really interesting just with like the environments they have. So if nothing else, I just want to get it for that and just kind of see what the game looks like. So I have not played it yet. So a problem with this is I left my Switch power charger in Cincinnati like a while ago.
Oops.
I know. Thankfully, Nintendo Switch is nice and it's just a USB-C cord.
Oh yeah. You can get that anywhere.
Yes, I accidentally got a USB to something else cord, like the old Android charger phone or whatever. So I need to go return that and get that. So I have not played it yet. That is the bottleneck for it. So I'm excited to try that out. I don't have anything to say about that, I guess.
That's fine. Sorry if I led you into something you weren't ready to talk about. What else have you been playing?
So video game wise, like, I have the typical stuff like Rocket League and Magic. That's not as interesting. I could talk about a board game I played yesterday called Five Tribes. That was pretty good. Mm-hmm. So I'm going to do that.
What is Five Tribes? I have.
Five Tribes is a game. It's a pretty simple to learn type game. The main mechanic of it is you play on a board that's made up of 5x6 tiles. Each tile has a color and has a victory point to it, or a victory point number to it, and then it has, at the beginning of the game, three different colored pieces on it. There's five different colored pieces of things, and basically each piece corresponds to a different action that you can do. Mm-hmm. Some of them you can just bank as, like, victory points, and then some of them correspond to kind of, like, different mechanics that are around the board. So one of them, you get pick up resources that you can trade in for victory points at the end of the game. One of them, pick up genies that kind of give you special abilities. It's like an Egyptian-themed type
as
game.
As genies do.
Yeah. The interesting mechanic of it, though, is like the movement aspect of it. So an action of what you do is you pick a tile, and like, so a tile will have like three different colored figures on it. They might all be the same color, but they might be different. And then you move them in a line, like a path on the board. Okay. You can't backtrack, and but you can go like in a circle and come back to where you started if you want to, if you have enough people to move. But the only restriction is the last person that you place in the line that you travel in has to match a color of a piece on the board. And then you take all the colored pieces of the last piece, so as many that are on the space that you landed, mm-hmm. and then based on the number that you picked up, then you do some sort of action with those. So, like, the more that you land on, the better.
Right.
So it has this really interesting, like, abstract game mechanic that's, like, the core mechanic of the game.
So movement basically charges your abilities.
Yeah, like, it's kind of like a little bit of a puzzle where, like, so if one space, like, has, like, three blue characters on it, for example, if you can find any space that has, like, a blue person on it and get it to end in that blue space, then you can clear the tile. And if you clear a tile of all its workers, then you claim it as, like, your own, and you get the victory points of that the tile's worth, and you do an action.
Yeah.
So trying to, like, clear tiles is, like, a main factor of it. And then whenever you, like, move along a path, you might, you know, like, move them through empty tiles. So, like, there's, like, a weird, like, abstract level game going on. So,
yeah. Well, you just want to make sure that, like, no particular straight path that you can, you know, that anybody could travel is especially laced with things that you have an interest in. Right.
Yeah. And you can do a little bit of sabotage where, like, if something has, like, all of the same piece, you could do a path through that and just leave something of a different color and then clear, like, a different tile if you wanted to. Yeah, so it was fun. I was showed this game yesterday, played it twice. Yeah, it was just, like, a fun board game to play. So the selling points of it is it's really easy to learn. So if you go through the rule book once, then you, like, have a good idea of how to play it. And so it's, like, a simple rules, but, like, a deeper strategy. So that's usually the mark of a good game.
But, like, the board being made up of 5x5 cards laid out, that sounds like Forbidden Island, Forbidden Desert,
yeah,
something like that.
It's similar to that, yeah.
Yeah. Hmm. Well, that's cool. Five Tribes.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Since the last time all of us were here, or at least you, me, and Dennis were here, we played Time Stories again.
Oh,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Nice. Yeah. Now, that was fun. We did the medieval-themed one, right?
Yeah.
We did.
The world, yeah, the magic one, the D&D one.
Yeah.
The high fantasy one.
Yeah, the one with the magic system that was the most inscrutable and inconvenient thing to ever engage with.
That was not playtested well enough.
No. It was like, okay, spend you're extremely time constrained in this tabletop game. Why don't you spend five or six rounds gathering materials so maybe you can cast two or three spells when you get to the final encounters? Neat.
Yeah.
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 I think maybe if you're, like, really good with the system, then maybe it's really powerful since you, like, can. So the. For anyone listening, what the magic system does is, like, usually you have to, like, kind of buff through a person's shield before you start taking away their health or important pieces. The way magic works is you just get around that and you can immediately take out whatever that thing is.
It's piercing damage.
We say take away the important pieces, we mean their organs.
Yeah. Their HP, their chunks of skin or whatever.
Yeah.
Which is you know, but it's also to cast spells, you have to spend these little tokens, which I honestly, it feels like, because this is an official expansion to the game, and they're like, man, we put all these little tokens in this in the system, so you got to use the tokens.
Yeah.
And it feels like they were just like, fine,
here, just gather up these different kinds of mana as reagents. There you go. Good luck.
I think they just like did it too well in the first game, where they had it be like morphine and bullets, and it was just like sweet stuff like that. And it's like, how can you top that?
Sweet stuff like drugs,
like drugs and lethal weapons. Yeah,
but I think the main problem is that the magic users have no other options. Like, if they're not casting spells, they are ridiculously underpowered. And in a game that usually, I mean, what would you say? One run through it has probably 30 rounds of combat, you're equipped to cast maybe 5 spells.
Right.
And that's generous. Could you
just like have no one play as magic users, or does someone have to do that?
That's what we did.
Yeah, that's how we got successful.
Theoretically, you could have gone in a couple locations and like farm materials, and like Cole said, with 5 or 6 rounds, you could get enough to not have to worry about it. But 5 or 6 rounds is literally a sixth of your time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
David, you remember back when we did the Lovecraft one where I played as the cantankerous old lady who was secretly OP because of her endurance?
Yeah.
I did the same thing by picking a paladin, and like basically I could re-roll any single one of my dice. like at any time, no matter what. And like we just succeeded by never having somebody who would have been a liability if they were out of reagents. There was one path to victory that was like through like the realm of limbo or whatever, where it's like anybody who doesn't have magic capability is locked. And everybody else has to free them before they can do anything. And like we exited that. Like that was our second abortive run. Like we finished that like with absolutely nothing left to tackle. What was after that? Yeah. So like we just decided to go back to being entirely mundane.
I maintain, and I don't know that I'll go back and play it to try it this way, but I maintain that the rule that would have made it work is you only lose the reagents if you fail the spell.
Yeah.
Because I think it pretty much any spell you cast, if you got like a 1 or maybe for some spells a 2, whatever the equivalent of that is on the roll, then nothing would happen.
Right.
And I think that should have been when you lost the reagents, and as long as the spell was successful, you held on to them.
Yeah.
Or at least either that or the other way around. The fact that like you could have all this happen and the spell just be worthless.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Yeah. That's unfortunate.
Yeah. But like the fiction of it was fine. Like it was pretty standard medieval stuff. Like there was nothing as inspired as the meta puzzle that was in the Lovecraft one, but like the general twist of like what was going on with the evil wizard king and what have you, like it's pretty predictable probably how that shook out, but it was
you're playing a time travel, like the whole convention is time travel, you're probably gonna see some more time travel in there somewhere.
Right.
And I mean those wizard kings, am I right?
Oh yeah, no, they're nothing is sacred. Yeah, so it's time stories, that was something that we all kind of dipped into.
Yeah, the other thing, just the other big thought I had on it was the other thing that made this version unique was there was a lot more randomization. So most of the time, the maps, you know, the cards go down in a specific order. This had probably 4 or 5 places where it said shuffle the cards, the map cards, lay them down. And it was designed so that it could be in any order, which is a cool idea if this is something that you were going to play through over and over again. But that's that doesn't really work with the nature of these stories. So
right.
Yes. Has there been any? Do you know any like third party, kind of community that's grown up?
There are a bunch of them. There's a lot.
There's a bunch of homebrews.
Because I could see that being cool.
Yeah. You know, time stories or Timmy stories, as we called it a while back. Like the entire idea is that like it is a setting in one sense, but also it is kind of a simplified rule set. Yeah, it's a platform.
Yeah. Well, it's like, yeah, you can go backwards in time or you can go to alternate realities, which encompasses pretty much everything.
Right. Yeah. Be cool to like a Dark Tower themed one. No.
Ooh, yeah.
Yeah.
So Dennis, do you think you would ever like kind of like DM a session of this game with like other people? Or would you ever play it again with other people?
Yeah, for the Asylum game, I totally would. Just like ride along and pull a Ben and not contribute, not let on that I know any of the puzzles. But just to see people go through it. I totally would. For the Prophecy of Dragons is what it's called. Which, by the way, no freaking dragons. So what the hell? Where are my dragons? I guess spoiler. But but for that one, I wouldn't. But for Asylum, I totally would.
Yeah. Asylum was really good. And I'm not just saying that because I figured out the meta puzzle. I'm kind of just saying it because I figured out the meta puzzle.
You know, as you do.
Yeah, right.
You have that forever. You can own that. I'm not gonna
own that. Next person, because David was here last time. Dennis, what have you been up to? What have you been playing?
Yeah, not much new, but I wanted to circle back around to Overwatch for a second.
Ooh, wow. It's been a while.
Yeah. It has been a while. I've gotten back in because the playoffs for the official Overwatch League inaugural season.
Ooh, I need to start watching that.
They have been some really good matches, particularly the series between Philadelphia and New York, Philadelphia and Boston was great. I'm not just saying that because I'm a Philly fan.
Is Philadelphia the closest the closest major city to us?
Correct. Yep.
Okay.
They are the closest city to us. It's funny, their team name is like the Fusion. They have the most nationalities represented on one team.
Nice.
Which is kind of cool. And then they also just have a very hyper aggressive play style that's fun to watch. So a lot of reasons to like them. Yeah. I like the individuals on the team. They haven't had any major scandals, which cannot be said of many Overwatch teams.
What?
They really got into all parts of the pro league, but that's for another time.
Okay.
So that's what's got me playing it again, and the thing that makes me want to talk about it again is the fact that they just implemented a looking for group feature, that is doing incredibly well. So you go in and you can look at who has posted for a group or create your own. You know, want ad essentially, where you say the roles that you want. You can say whether or not you need to have a microphone. You can set the limits in terms of skill rating on how broad you're willing to go. Like it's very, you have a lot of control. But what that means is I can guarantee when I go to play the game, I'm going to play with people who won't, basically derp around and not play their assigned role.
Even I'm playing with people be there.
Right. It's people that want to be there, people that want to communicate.
Yeah.
And I instantly saw my performance in the games jump.
Nice.
Just for having the ability to work with other people who communicate. When you play in a six-man group, you tend to get matched against other six-man groups. So I don't think it's completely just that it was like I was in a group and other people weren't. Like literally just being able to use the microphone effectively had an impact on my success. And it is the best possible experience. Like people are so nice. They cooperate. They take feedback, which was incredible. Like being like, hey, you might not want to be on that champion for this section of the game because, it's whatever. People being like, oh, all right. Yeah, no, I'll switch. It's unheard of.
Yeah, everybody has their main, and fuck you if you have a problem with it.
Right, exactly. And they added like a ranking or an endorsement system, where at the end of the match you can give people little props for being a good teammate or being a good shot caller, or being a formidable opponent. So there's like this positive reinforcement going on, and the Overwatch team came out and said that it has reduced toxicity in terms of like things being reported and complaints by 25-ish%.
Just by people being able to declare what kind of game they are interested in playing and also how much they like what kind of contribution they want to make.
Yes, exactly. And it is like, you know, I recently also tried, stepped into League of Legends again and instantly noped back out. And it's just, it's one of those things where you experience this looking for group system and you're like, why the hell is this not in every single multiplayer game ever? Like it's maybe I'm being reductive, but the model's out there.
Yeah.
It's so easy to replicate and it makes things so much better. Like the data says it makes things so much better. There's really no excuse for this to not exist in games from here on out.
Yeah. I think that the insecurity kind of abounds around, the tension between will I get the kind of game that I like or will I have to wait for it?
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you define a pretty stringent set of requirements, you're probably gonna have to wait longer than would be like considered good from a customer service perspective, right?
If you're creating the group, that's possible. But there's also that group browser where you can see what everyone else has posted, and so you can kind of take your pick out of that and get it instantly.
Okay.
It's almost like allowing people to choose the games they want to play is a good idea. Yeah. It would be like if you allowed them to choose, the servers and game modes they wanted to play.
No, you know what? I think I would rather be like shoved into a heuristic nightmare.
But the other benefit is if you're playing in a six-man group and the thing is matching to six-man groups, that tends to go very quickly. And so my queue times, I would say, on average, have gone down, which is a surprising benefit, because I would have originally said that my queue times would go up.
Yeah. That would be my guess, too. Like, the pickier you get, the harder it is. I mean, like, an LFG system is, like, explicitly an MMO thing. They've had a lot of practice with that in WoW, but I think that like the difference is in WoW, a lot of people have like stuff they can do while they're waiting for somebody to bite. So it's interesting to hear that is kind of succeeding in an ersatz lobby system, right?
Yeah. So and potentially maybe that will cause longer wait times overall, but. I will never voluntarily go back to a solo queue experience again. It's just that much better. Gameplay wise, I've been playing the reworked Symmetra, which she's a hero that kind of focuses on placing turrets and does a lot of positional stuff. She used to be horribly underpowered and basically unplayable. since the rework came through, she's got a lot more staying power and is able to have a lot better impact. In the moment, versus kind of you kind of set up and then you either keep your setup or you lose. This new Symmetra has a little more flexibility, and I've been racking up the gold medals. So I've gotten, I'd say I'm getting play of the game as Symmetra. I'm not exaggerating. One out of every three or four games that I play.
Yeah,
which feels good, man.
Isn't she also? She's one of the more kind of narratively interesting characters, at least from like the bits I've been able to pick up.
There's a couple things that make her notable. So she works for like a major corporation, and her storyline as such is that she's kind of still drinking the corporate Kool-Aid, despite a lot of hints that maybe this corporation is evil. And so I don't know if they'll come to a point where they choose to have her wake up, or she's just going to be perpetually the denier that anything is wrong.
Yeah.
The other thing is, I think they did confirm that Symmetra is on the spectrum. Just as an aspect of who she is.
Yeah.
And Overwatch has always been great about diversity, and so that kind of makes sense.
Yeah.
So she's got a lot of kind of little narrative or story character hooks there.
Yeah. No, I just I have bitterness about Symmetra. However, that's because I walked into Overwatch saying, "Hey guys, I like Team Fortress 2." Or in Team Fortress Classic, like playing as engineer, right? You set up turrets, you set up kind of like support hardware, you maintain it, and then do a little bit of just strong defense. Right. Mm-hmm. People said, "Oh, play Symmetra," and I'm like, "Oh, geez, this is not what I wanted at all." And everybody is saying, "No, like that maps, it's fine." Like, no, that's not what I want. And then I bounced off of Overwatch in general.
Well, the German guy, like that's
Swedish, Torbjorn. Yeah, there's one character that's German. Much more engineer. That would be Reinhardt.
Much more engineer. Reinhardt.
That's right.
But
he's like straight up is the engineer. Yeah. Like, he really is.
Yeah, maybe I had bad advice coming into it. Is Symmetra the first champion that they have like revised this strongly, as opposed to, you know, just kind of bumping different percentages and stuff?
That's a good question. I
have no idea.
The thing is, I believe this is probably one of the most dramatic changes that they've made, but it's also the second time they've made this level of change to Symmetra. They've really, really struggled to get it right.
Yeah.
My barometer for how well she's been reworked is when that patch comes through in the Overwatch League, because right now the old Symmetra has never, ever been picked.
Wow.
And even for a single side of Overwatch League, that's how unplayable she was.
Yeah.
Which, you know, she's designed a little bit so that maybe like a lower skill player, like her primary fire auto locks onto players, or the old version of her, that was the case. They've since changed that. And we'll see if that actually has her showing up. I think she will, but we will see.
Well, from what I remember, from what I played before, she kind of had the double-edged sword of, on the other hand, like, if you were in a disorganized group, you know, something like that, like, she could be virtually unbeatable. You know, it was the thing where it was like, if you knew what to do, you know, she, you know, just had no chance. On the other hand, there are a lot of scenarios where if you didn't know what to do, she could just like lock down a choke point and it was just throwing yourself into a blender.
Go ahead.
That seems like an exceedingly low hurdle to get over if you're at all concerned about what beats what, you know, the rock, paper, scissors of the game. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it was a little bit of a win more hero where, like, you know, if she was having success and absolutely locking things down, it probably means that the rest of the team is doing well enough that you didn't really need her in the first place. The rework feels great. The looking for group system feels great. And I've enjoyed that quite a bit. I want to talk just real quick about the other new game I've been playing, which is Absolver. Which is
I need to jump on that.
Yeah, martial arts esque MMO / Dark Souls kind of game.
Yeah, this one has come up like since it went free on PlayStation Plus. People have been whenever anything that is vaguely inspired by Dark Souls comes out, people come to me and Gary and say, "You can bring back Bonfireside Chat now because Absolver's out."
Right. Well, Absolver's been out. That train has left the station.
They still come to us. It is flattering that people want that show back, but I don't know.
Sure. This is not the one to do it for. I can tell you that right up front.
So it's a dud.
There's a lot going for it. It's got the combat system from Remember Me, where you kind of pick individual moves to string together.
Okay.
Your character has four stances, which are indicated at any time by kind of like a little compass thing at the bottom of the screen that shows you which stance you're in. And various moves will start out of one stance and end in another, or some of it will start and end in the same stance. Mm-hmm. And so it gives you a lot of controls over there's a regular attack and a special attack. And you can map, I think, you know, four sets of combos for each based on the four stances. With individual kicks or punches kind of worked in. Mm-hmm. And you have a ton of control over, okay, I want to start fights in this stance, and I know that my regular attack string puts me in stance B, and my special attack string puts me in stance C. And then from there, I can choose whether I go back to A or over to D because, you know, based on my regular or special attack inputs. And so when the combo system is working, it feels great because you're kind of fluidly going through the stances, and you can kind of just combo until your energy runs out.
Mm-hmm.
Which, you know, that feels really good. So they've done that system better than Remember Me did, which is a low bar, but they've done it well. The world that you are in, and the story feel very, very Dark Souls in that, you know, there's kind of an opening cutscene that shows you. Maybe it looks like you're in some kind of school, like you're maybe training somewhere, and you put on a mask that warps you maybe into another world, or like, is this all a simulation that you're experiencing through your mask, or maybe it took you somewhere else physically, not really sure. And then you go into this world and kind of can go anywhere from the top. And there's a big map that shows you there's two big bads, and nine, I think, smaller bosses throughout this world.
Small bads. Kind
of, yeah, small bads.
Small bads and strong bads.
I was going to say, small bads cool game for attractive people. and you can tackle them in any order, which had the effect of, you know, I promptly kind of ran a little bit into the world, then started running away from a group that was kind of outside my pay grade, and wound up just stumbling into one of the big bads' lairs and promptly getting killed. No like souls dropping system, so that's merciful. Yeah. But it's very much the same kind of like, hey, lock on to one person and duel with them. And anytime you're fighting a group of two or more, it's a very serious situation. It takes a lot of concentration, if it's not just an out and out bad situation for you.
Yeah.
So that's kind of the outline of the game, is like you're in this world, very light story. The item descriptions are not there to fill it in, unfortunately. And you're just kind of tackling these bosses in any order you can. Mm-hmm. It is a pre, what is that, Soulstone? In Dark Souls, before you can warp between bonfires.
Pre Lord Vessel.
Lord Vessel, thank you. Yeah, pre Lord Vessel format, which means I'm terribly lost right now, and I don't know how to get back to the starting area with the map. That happened quick, and so I'm just kind of out in the game world.
You're just far afield.
Try to do my thing. There's like a boss icon right next to the starting area where you see the map for the first time. Mm-hmm. I was like, great, I'll go fight that. And then promptly got lost. which, you know, on one side is fun, and on the other side is infuriating, because you just don't feel like you have a lot of control over where you go. You can see the map at the effective bonfires, but even that is very vague and unhelpful. When the combat's working, it's good. I mentioned that. But the game has kind of this really lo-fi art style, like very polygonal. Mm-hmm. And
seems like it hinges more on kind of filters and lighting and stuff.
Yes, but it just feels lo-fi. Like I think it wants to be that kind of aesthetic that's intentional, and I'm sure there is intentionality behind it, but it just winds up looking cheap.
Yeah.
Compound on top of that even despite the lo-fi style, it has a lot of trouble with frame rate stuttering.
What? In an action game like this?
Yes. Ugh. Yes. In a martial arts based action game, that is very painful.
Yeah.
So that was unfortunate.
Was this a PC game that was ported to consoles?
You know, it's by Devolver. Devolver.
Okay, so maybe not. I thought that was the case, and wondered if, you know, maybe that was some of the thing, but.
Yeah, it looks like it was put out for PS4 and Windows at the same time.
Okay, so maybe not.
My only experience with seeing this game is Jonathan Blow streamed it and got very frustrated with it and just kind of cursed at it for a little while. So.
Yeah, the frame rate kind of breaks it, which is sad because the combat is fun when it's working. The other thing is it has a Journey-esque co-op system.
People just kind of drop in, drop out kind of thing.
Yeah, or less co-op and more just interaction. Yeah, people wander through your world. You can absolutely attack them and try to pick fights. And anyone can do that with anyone. Or you can just select a little menu item and request co-op. Mm-hmm. And then they kind of officially spawn in. Not spawn in, but officially become a part of your world more permanently. And you can tackle fights together. The cool thing is that even when you're doing that, you can still damage each other. And that could very dangerously not be a cool thing. I think that could be very frustrating and all that. My experience with it was that it caused a lot better coordination in fights, mm-hmm. where we'd either pincer an enemy and attack them from either side. That was effective. Or if it wasn't possible to pincer, we would each kind of take our turn. And you would kind of wait in the background and either pull additional enemies away from the primary fight or just wait for the person you were co-oping with to back off. And then you kind of jumped in and took your turn.
Right, right.
So that piece worked really well. And I appreciated it. But just the stuttering was a deal breaker. And while, you know, I appreciate the Dark Soulsian open world thing, feeling lost and unable to get your bearings again, is incredibly frustrating as well. So, yeah. Like I said, a lot of interesting stuff going for it here, but not one I can really recommend.
Yeah.
So does it have, intentional co-op? Or is it just like, you happen to run into people and then co-op?
I have to think there is intentional co-op, but I have not explored to figure out exactly how to do that.
Yeah.
And even so, fighting alongside someone is fun. I don't think it could sustain this game for the entirety. So, worth checking out if you're into martial arts. It seems like this is a team that is very passionate about that field and has put together a very, very complex and well thought out system for the combat that way.
Mm-hmm.
I will say that the dodge abilities are not working very well for me. Now, I've never been good at parries in Dark Souls.
Yeah.
And I've got the stuttering problem. So, make of that what you will.
That's fucking crazy that it's stuttering when it runs native on a PS4.
Right.
That seems like something you would really prioritize.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But
it doesn't need to be 60 frames a second. It can be a fool's errand in a lot of ways, but shoot for consistency at the very least.
Yes. Yeah. Consistency, a little more guidance, and just a little more quality of life help would get this game over the edge, I think.
Yeah.
As it is, just check it out if you're into martial arts, or are just really desperate for more Dark Souls-esque stuff.
Yeah. Is that everything?
And that's me. Yeah, okay. That is.
I'm going to do mine because it's a bunch of stuff, but it's real quick on each of these. The first one, and this is something I'm a little bit surprised to go back to because it's been so long, but Rock Band 3.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, I know, right? Yeah, just put it down for a very, very long time. But for a personal project, I want to get a little bit more involved in playing keyboard. And I still have my Rock Band 3 keyboard.
Oh.
Yeah. So I pulled that open just to, get my muscle memory going again for playing chords and notes and things like that. Guys, that is still so fun. Yeah.
How much time have you spent on keyboard versus everything else?
Everything else, like...
Like the other instruments.
Guitar and drums.
In Rock Bands, it's definitely a fraction of those. Like drum is possibly the most of an instrument that I played. I have no way of knowing specifically what those are, but keyboard, I live on a second floor apartment and I cannot really play drums with a clean conscience, because of the kick drum or whatever. But yeah, keyboard doesn't always work, right? Not every song is definitely, is designed to be engaging throughout. There are plenty of them that you fire up and say, oh, I like this song. Think about Man on the Moon by REM. Fantastic song, one of my favorite songs of all time. Fire that up on keyboard. I know the keyboard track to this, the da 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 da. Okay, cool. Yeah. That's really only during the pre-chorus. So you're sitting there watching the timeline scroll by, listening to a very good song, just waiting. Like Andy Kaufman listening to Mighty Mouse or whatever, here I come to save the day, and then you do that, and then you just wait some more. But when you play a song that is really made for it, it's great. Specifically playing pro keyboard, playing the actual notes. It's weird going to that. Especially after Rocksmith, which I think is such a good kind of blending of playing a game and also learning an instrument and learning a song specifically. Mm-hmm. It says, hey, this is the chord that you were expected to play. Here are the notes that you're expected to play. Here this is. Sitting down and playing something on a keyboard without the game actually telling you, yeah, these are the buttons that you're supposed to hit here, or here is, here's this run that you're supposed to do, without labeling it and saying yeah, this song is, G, A, D, over and over again. The fact that it doesn't label chords for the keyboard when it does for guitar seems like a huge missed opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
And makes it fall down as a teaching tool, because what I want to do is come away from that saying okay, I know that Man on the Moon is these chords and I want to sit down and be able to play it and monkey around with that. I have no idea why they decided not to do that. But again, in a post Rocksmith world, it seems like a missed opportunity, especially because you are sitting there playing the actual goddamn notes. Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. And like, if I knew the keyboard better, I could say like, yeah, you know, the root on this is a C, so I'm probably playing some manner of a C chord. But I shouldn't have to do that on my own, right? So mm-hmm. it's a little bit of a mixed thing. Like, I'm having an awful lot of fun with it, but like, I am definitely going to abandon it for some more
piano smith.
Yeah. Or like, there are all kinds of apps you can do. Like the Rock Band keyboard, thankfully, it has a MIDI output. And so you can plug that into a Mac and do, you know, like do a piano teacher kind of things and graduate and look at tabs and adapt things, what have you. But like, man, that is a missed opportunity. And maybe if that, maybe if they continued developing that over the course of, you know, a few more years, they would have, you know, made that an opportunity for you. Right. Yeah. But Rock Band 3, interesting, cool, fun game. I have more songs on that than I remember having, which just speaks to, you know, how many songs I bought back when it was a going thing. Yeah.
Do you have any Queens of the Stone Age songs?
Yes. Several.
All right.
Yeah. Yeah.
What percentage of songs for the deaf do you have?
They don't have an awful lot. I think I don't even think they have go with the flow on that. I think it is really just No One Knows. That was in Rock Band 3, and then like way back when Rock Band 1 came out, they put out a few songs from Lullabies to Paralyze. Specifically, okay. Sick, 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 and oh gosh, they have In My Head on there, stuff like that. So it's just like weird stuff for them to have from Queens of the Stone Age. But they do have they've got some Them Crooked Vultures, so that kind of evens things out. Yeah. Other thing is The Sims 4.
Oh, fun.
Yeah, we got off of playing The Sims 3 for Watch Out for Fireballs, and my hunger for The Sims was not necessarily slaked. I don't have an awful lot to say about this that is not just a repeat of things that we talked about in that episode.
You fucked Santa Claus yet?
I am trying so hard. No, I picked it up. I've got all the expansions because I just bought them on sale whenever they were out, and I picked up Seasons. Seasons is real neat. Like... You would think that maybe it would just be like a superficial thing, but like, oh, it's snowing out, or oh, there are these festivals coming up. That is the, like, that makes a pretty big difference to like the rhythm of the Sims games in general. I was a little bit kind of gun shy about the Sims 4 because they did roll back on a lot of features and things like that in its base release. They've slowly been adding a lot of the stuff that I like back in, specifically around like self-employment or kind of like non-standard, you know, I disappear for most of my day's job kind of things. But they have managed to kind of reassemble the experience that I want out of expansions, which, yes, they are squeezing money out, but still it is a fun game to play because it's the fucking Sims. It is remarkable how much quicker the experiences, and all of the examples that I could give are incredibly banal, but like the fact that you can socialize while you're eating is a huge deal. Like, you can do a bunch of stuff while other things are happening. Like, I cooked a meal while I was having a conversation with somebody, and then my guy, while he was holding a plate of food, decided to go out and get the mail and also put away a book while he was talking with somebody. Like, a big kind of bugbear with The Sims is that things are so modal. Like, mm-hmm. if I'm going to talk to somebody, I need to spend 15 minutes of in-game time squaring up against them and hope that they are not trying to do something else while I'm doing this. And in The Sims 4, all of that has been smoothed out in a huge way. So, like, yeah, it is not necessarily as full-featured as The Sims 3 is still, specifically with the lack of an open world. Within a particular town, but like the actual moment to moment of like doing things and navigating the world and managing your tasks has been such a huge boon. So I'm like really, really impressed with where The Sims 4 is right now.
That's good to hear.
Yeah. Any other questions about The Sims 4?
No. Are you going to talk about Outlast 2?
That's going to be after this next one. This is more of a check-in right. kind of thing. Last week I talked about playing Lumines and talked about how I'm bad at color matching combo based things. I am not, unlike Ben, I am not a natural Dr. Mario player. more of a Tetris kind of, like, let's fill up all the empty space kind of guy. So I've been playing just a shitload of Puyo Puyo Tetris, specifically just Tetris. I've been playing a shitload of Tetris. I've managed to, so in looking up the highest scores that people have been able to get, like just looking up on YouTube and doing searches, like really, really good players max out at about a little bit over 600,000 is what I've seen. I'm starting to get like quarter of a million, like 250,000, which I never play things for score, but something has really compelled me to learn about, like, what does it mean to play Tetris in a high scoring way? And then just to continue scratching that itch. So I don't know if this is a kind of transient fascination or kind of a, like a new infection that I have taken into me. But playing Puyo Puyo Tetris for score is really fun because Tetris has always been good.
So I'm thinking about how the time I saw you at the Portland Retro Gaming Expo, they also had a Tetris tournament there. So now I'm just thinking every time you go to a convention, this is what's tempting you into playing Tetris now.
Maybe. Now, those people get so much attention. I would not be able to stand the pressure of that. I would be, I would get up there, hold the controller. I would hear the dun, 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 and I would immediately like vomit down the front of my shirt and I'd be like carried away on a Hannibal Lecter dolly. Yeah.
I thought that's why they invented cannabis.
Haven't played Tetris while high.
You can play Tetris while not high?
Yeah. I don't know. I've got a couple of pills. I can maybe load something up. See if that improves.
Next live stream.
Yeah. See if that improves my ability. Just put some edibles in. Last thing though, Outlast 2. Wow, this is a really effective horror game. Oh, so my pretty. God. Yeah. I was, you know, like Outlast 1 was remarkable because of just how spicy it was. Like, yeah, there's a lot of, you know, violence, you know, there's ding dongs flopping around, etc. And it's generally like a grimy game that is pretty oppressive because there are people kind of always chasing you around. However, the problem with Outlast is that it takes place in an asylum. And it has a lot to do with like scientific experiments on people and how do they lose their sanity or whatever. Outlast 2, however, there's a little bit of that still going on, but it takes place in a kind of religious Jonestown style compound in Arizona. So it removes you from the asylum setting and puts you out kind of in the middle of this sprawling rural kind of area where you're going through like small towns and you're going through, you know, fields and going through creeks and swamps and things like that. And everything just feels so fucking filthy.
So how do they,
is this what Far Cry 5 was too chicken to be?
Maybe. I don't know. Like you are definitely dealing with a cult that has taken, you know, kind of extreme Christianity and added their own kind of fucked up ideas about fertility and the end of days and turned it into an excuse for as much violence and horrible degradation as possible. So I don't know how much like that goes into the fact that, you know, like Far Cry 5 should have dealt with like how weird preppers are. Instead of Far Cry 5 being like, some preppers are good.
I'm not sure that's fair.
No, I'm just...
amount of degradation you go through in playing Far Cry 5.
So. I don't think preppers in general are like, they're like saving some food for if something goes bad. Probably not bad, but like it is weird that Far Cry 5 like pits you like good preppers versus bad preppers. It is like a weirdly toothless stance for them to take. Yeah. but Far Cry 5, or not Far Cry 5, fuck me. Outlast 2. This is a grimy, like gross ass game that deals with some really, really rowdy stuff that might be like too much for a lot of people. And there's an argument to be had about whether or not like, okay, this is like trying way too hard or it's way too intense for this to be enjoyable. But like I've been streaming this and like I have had a terrible grimace on my face for most of while it's happening, but like, it makes me feel something. And in a time where pretty much everything is numbness and wondering when things will get worse. I don't know, like that is a role.
It's comforting to, for them to already be worse.
Kind of. Yeah. No, like, you know, that, like that is a role for horror to, like, you know, exist solely to press buttons to, you know, kind of test the limits of what you find acceptable. Right. So it's not a game that I would recommend for everybody, specifically because there is some like really, really like rowdy sexual stuff in it. But like, you know, if you step back and say like, okay, taking it on a case by case basis, like a lot of this stuff can be used for horror, not so much tastefully, like this exists to be tasteless, but like this can be used, you know, to press a certain person's buttons, or, you know, it's like, you know, to exist to push a limit, then yes, this does exist, and it is incredibly cohesive in terms of, you know, putting you as a player through this tribulation that is set up. So I think that this is, you know, compared to especially the original Outlast, this is leaps and bounds better and more affecting than that is. Not just in a moment to moment, like am I freaked out by this or not, or do I feel dread, or do I feel stressed out about this? Like, you know, mechanically, this is far more, I think, robust than that. But even more so in like a subject matter point of view. And I think that this is a kind of a more obvious conclusion to where they were going after Outlast Whistleblower. Which is the game that notably made me gag into a trash can that was near me while I was streaming.
Oof.
Yeah. Ruh-roh. Yeah.
Is that, so, yeah, all right.
The buzzsaw scene, but
yeah, yeah.
does it manage to dodge away? Like, I had kind of dismissed it as it kind of looked gross in terms of a, like, rural people are degenerate, am I right? Type of thing.
Yeah.
Does it manage to kind of dodge away from that, or?
It does. I think that it does a pretty good job of getting away from both Christians are backward and wrong and this is what they lead to, and also gets away from, like, oh, if somebody doesn't live in the city, they're going to skin you and eat you and kill you. Like, this is specifically invoked as, like, whoa, these people drastically misunderstand both the teachings and the station in life that they have.
It's like, sure, people in Scientology are scary, kind of.
Yeah, yeah. Oh, okay. Like they are massively misled by charismatic leaders, and also have gotten so involved in kind of sectarian conflicts between them that they have spiraled inward, as opposed to being a product specifically of either being rural or being people of faith.
Sure.
Yeah.
I do find it funny, one, like, direct carryover between Far Cry 5 and this is just, don't let the crazy cult have a rocket launcher.
Yeah, don't do that. Something that's interesting, like, you know, you look at this, you know, especially when you're dealing with such real life things, your main character and your viewpoint character specifically, the values that they bring to this or the lens that you look at it through is really important. Your main character has a history with religious education. Like, they went to Catholic school when they were young and had a traumatic experience during that is, you know, not exactly what you would think it would be. And as things get more real and as they start losing their grip on kind of their sanity, as they leave more and more of what they consider to be the normal world, they start kind of flashing back to their time, you know, in school and thinking about people that they lost and the experience that they had. This is not separated at all by loading screens. It's barely separated by doors. Like, you will be going down a corridor and watch it kind of seamlessly transform from, you know, this mine corridor into a school hallway with lockers and stuff. Or you will be crawling through a vent, you know, in a, like in a facility on the compound, and then the vent will collapse and it will drop you out into a classroom. Like, the integration between what your character is experiencing now and what he is flashing back to, it gets super precariously close in a way that is super engaging and very, very disorienting.
Do they justify at all, like, why you can't just like leave and call the cops. Like, is there? Because like in the first game, you were explicitly locked in, right?
Yeah. And this one, I don't know if it's as, you know, like physically justified as you are locked into this facility. In this one, you are there's extreme time pressure to save your wife before she is, but you know, like that is what you are chasing. Like
something tells me if you tried to leave and call the cops, you'd wind up in a classroom.
Probably. But it's like the setup is, you know, there was a young girl who was found murdered, and she was also pregnant. She was like 15 years old, kind of near this compound. Your wife is a reporter who is going there chasing the story. You're the cameraman, and your helicopter crashes kind of in the middle of the compound, and she's taken away.
And once again, I say, what type of reporter isn't armed?
Yeah, but Outlast 2, like I like it a lot, for as uncomfortable as it makes me. I like it quite a bit.
That's high praise.
Yeah.
It's also only $30 right now on Steam.
Oh, wow. Yeah. You were watching it, like Ben, you really seem to be, into it. Is there anything I'm forgetting or any angle that I'm not exploring?
The one thing I want to add is it's just a really, really, really pretty game. Like, mm-hmm. I was just very impressed by the graphics of it, which sounds like a very, I guess, shallow way to look at it. But, like, I don't know. For some reason, I guess it's in the same level as, like, Resident Evil 6 in terms of, like, how high fidelity the graphics are.
Yeah.
But I didn't expect that from this, I guess, because I guess, like, the first Outlast, I didn't have the same experience with, even though they were both built on the same engine.
Yeah, so. Kind of like bland. Outlast 1 did. To an extent, again, like the trappings were really prosaic for a horror game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's what I was like most impressed by. But yeah, I agree that it is your statement that it's a very like filthy game. But it does the thing I like about it is it's not like a lot of like cheap type scares, I guess. Whereas mm-hmm. like the scene that you talked about before, the one that made you gag or whatever, that seems almost like a cheap type scare or something, like, or maybe like gratuitous way to scare a person.
Yeah.
Whereas like this is just like it's much more, it makes me much more like uncomfortable and like, yeah. I don't know. Yeah.
It's it is oppressive and stressful and deals with taboo in a way that is not literally a buzzsaw menacing your junk.
Yeah.
Yeah. as you hopefully don't do.
Yeah. So I'm looking forward to, I think I'm going to finish it this weekend. If I don't, then it'll extend it to another day. But like, I'm very pleasantly surprised at how they managed to kind of like beat my expectations for what a sequel to that could be.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Good.
Yeah. If there are not any other questions, then let's do David. David, what you been up to?
Sure. So, trying to think, just a little bit more Destiny, mainly just getting on to get Crimson from Xur, which is basically a three-round burst revolver, which I'm pretty sure isn't actually a thing. with the additional features that any hits you get with it immediately restart your life regen, and any kills with it restart your life regen, and if you one of the kills is a headshot, it immediately reloads. So that's mainly just a cool gun, which is, again, the best reason to play Destiny.
All of Destiny is about ways to avoid reloading. That's why I rock the Actium War Rig.
Yep. Or if you're playing as the Hunter, ways to just always be punching.
APB? No, ABP.
Other than that, been continuing on with Neo. I'm trying to think. I got through the Ninja Mansion level, which is kind of cool.
I don't think I did that. Is that the one that is kind of broken apart and flooded, or?
No, so it's after that. It's one where it's all like, like a whole bunch of like spinning walls. So like, you know, like doors that are one way only doors. And like there's a section where it's like a room where you're walking on the ceiling. You know, a whole bunch of traps, things like that.
Nice. No, I never got to that. That sounds cool though.
Yeah. It's very neat. It's a lot of fun, a lot of kind of clever uses of it. And I really like the boss of the level is a lot of fun. Let's see, other than that, they killed off my favorite character, which kind of makes me sad.
Who was that?
Was it Nikomato or whatever?
Cat man?
Yeah, the little cat spirit that's like your kind of guide through the first chunk of the game.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. So, Grant, I know because I'm a filthy wiki reader. I know that he comes back in the expansion. So I guess that's a thing. But still, he's yeah.
How dare you?
You know. Try to think. Other than that, I actually got to though a difficulty wall that I think might be the like. This is where I call it quits.
Okay.
Just because there's a boss called the Ogress that's actually a really cool boss in terms of like design and story beats and stuff like that. But she basically can kill me in two hits. And it's a thing where it's just, you know, it's very much it's the a boss built around the Dark Souls like. If you stand right next to her, most of her attacks will miss.
Yeah.
But the problem is, when you can only take two hits, most doesn't really cut it.
Right.
So, I mean, I'm still gonna, you know, try to figure it out, stuff like that. One of the kind of weird things about their, setup is, like leveling up really doesn't dramatically affect your power. So unfortunately, it's not something where you can just like overlevel a boss that's giving you a lot of trouble.
Yeah, that's something that that you know it shares with Souls at the very least.
Well, although I'd say like even in Souls, like you can like you know bump up say like your vitality and get like a meaningful increase in survivability or the same thing with damage.
Yeah.
Whereas like. I want to say, like, my, you know, like, if you put a significant portion of your points directly in your damage stat, maybe that accounts for a fifth of your damage.
Hmm. Yeah.
Like, yeah, so, trying to think so, though. I mean, other than that, I mean, I'm still really, really enjoying the game. I'm really enjoying the setting. Oh, I've really gone into using more of the you've got like your weird like Taoist magic and your like ninja powers abilities are a lot of fun. I do think they really missed an opportunity to name the game Ninja Gaijin.
Oh, jeez. that probably took a tremendous amount of constraint, given that you are playing as a Westerner adopting samurai roles.
Yep.
Yeah.
So,
and basically, like Hattori Hanzo act or Hattori Hanzo's son acts as your Q.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. So, it's. Yeah, and the weird plot line of like his father actually gets kind of weird. I'm not sure what to make of it, but that's something I'm still waiting to pan out from it. So, I mean, other than that, I don't know. Like, it's an interesting game. I do feel like, and I felt this way a little bit with Dark Souls. I feel like, unfortunately, I think the dueling segments, the you know parts where you're fighting powerful humanoid component opponents, are by far the strongest part of the game. Yeah. And I think that it's even more exaggerated in this because a lot of the skills you can unlock are, you know, it does a lot more, you know, attempting to replicate the weapons, you know, weapon use. So there's a lot of things where, like, you know, like if you have a spear, you can like sweep someone's legs out from under them, or like, you know, sort of like push them past you so that you'll end up behind them. Mm-hmm. And like that doesn't work for like some giant, you know, Oni that's trying to smash you.
Yeah.
But yeah, I mean, I know, still fun. Still enjoying, like I said, the random Japanese you know, kind of you know different approach to like folklore than the like ye olde Queen's English you know, high fantasy setting.
Absolutely. Yeah.
So yeah.
Neat. Destiny 2 and Neo, is that all?
Yep, that's it.
Cool. Well, how does everybody feel about buttoning it up?
Butt Nation.
Okay. Thank you, everybody, for listening to this episode of The Level number 249. We're so glad that you took the time. You know the usual stuff you can do. I do not have a lot in the way of admin aside from saying, hey, Patreon, hey, Apple Podcasts, ratings, reviews, hey, telling friends, hey, come back next time. Hey, I've been Cole Ross at Cole Ross on Twitter.
Hey. I've been Dennis Furia at GreenLaser73 on Twitch.
Ho, I've been David at, I guess, DuckFeed.
Hey, I've been Ben Merkel at Merkleby on Twitch.
Hey.
Hey, stick around for some titles. Hey. The Fonz.
That's a weird term. You have so much power, Cole. How are you doing your outro?
I know. I know you guys are just matching my energy, and it's just very funny how close you follow. I only have one, which is
I only have one as well.
Okay, it's bleeding all the way down.
Mm-hmm. So I had that one.
Okay. Ben, you said, was that yours, or?
I had oxygen bone.
Okay.
Yeah, I had that in the form of, you know, it's your oxygen bone.
Okay.
But yeah, I feel like oxygen bone's good.
Okay.
I also had hate the game, love Wikipedia.
What?
Huh?
What was that? Eat the game, love Wikipedia?
Hate the game, love Wikipedia.
Okay.
This was in reference to my strange knowledge of Elder Scrolls lore.
Gotcha. Okay.
This Tigger's made out of springs.
Okay.
Similarly, where's the honey? Do not fuck that Nazi.
Okay. Well, real quick here. Where's the honey? Is it H-O-N-E-Y or H-U-N-N-Y?
I think it has to be the U.
Okay.
And can you make an N backwards?
I don't think I can. Don't fuck that Nazi.
Yep. Boy, I feel like it's funnier with do not fuck that Nazi. More emphatic. So one of them that I'm kind of, I also had cock malady. However, I feel like I even more enjoy it. I think I was like writing this down right as you like switched to me, like, you know, needing to read a thing. So I was going quick. I ended up writing it as cock my lady. My lady.
Oh, no. Please, no.
Oh, God.
Jumped into a heuristic nightmare. And I've got a couple pills.
Dennis, what you got?
Yeah, that's quite the list. I too had oxygen bone.
Okay.
And that's pretty good. Pretty good. I had Batman and Christopher Robin.
It's okay.
In the Tigger is Made Out of Springs. And then I also recently, and I don't know if this qualifies as is something you wouldn't put as a title, but Ninja Gaiden is pretty good.
That might be a little bit on the edge of being offensive, maybe. I don't know.
Yeah, I'm just not familiar enough to know if Gaijin is in that realm. So
I think it might not be, but
isn't. But it's like it usually is like the accepted common term for like a non-Japanese person. It would generally not be considered a slur so much as it might be considered othering, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I might lump that in with like it is funny and fine for us to have said in the episode, but maybe like along with cock malady and do not fuck that Nazi, maybe not something I want to put on Front Street if possible.
Yes. Sure. I defer to the opinion.
What else outside of Ninja Gaiden?
Oh, those are the three I had.
Okay. By votes, Oxygen Bone takes it.
Companion to Sugar Bone.
Yeah. How's that feel?
Yeah.
Okay.
My dogs love it.
Be fair, dogs love all bones, so.
Yes. Go give them your scratches. I'm gonna go to bed.
Cool. I'm sneaking Luke's birthday present into the house after this.
So. Oh shit.
It feels so weird. I'm going to like go have supper, I guess.
Yeah. I'm gonna go eat dinner as well. Don't feel weird.
But it's like it's 7 o'clock here. It's I know.
Yeah. All right. Take care, everybody.
Peace, y'all.
Bye.